aided him out of the country, but he would not go. If it please you, my lord, I have a witness to swear it. So he called upon his witness, but the judge, not being forward to examine the witness, I desired that he would be pleased to let my mittimus be read in the face of the court and the country, in which the crime was signified for which I was sent to prison. The judge said it should not be read. I said it ought to be, seeing it concerned my liberty and my life. The judge said again, it shall not be read. I said, it ought to be read, for if I have done anything worthy of death or of bonds, let all the country know it. Then, seeing they would not read it, I spoke to one of my fellow prisoners. Thou hast a copy of it. Read it up. It shall not be read, said the judge. Jailer, take him away. I'll see whether he or I shall be master. So I was taken away, and a while after called for again. I still called to have the mittimus read, for that signified the cause of my commitment. I again spoke to the friend, my fellow prisoner, to read it up, which he did. The judge, justices, and the whole court were silent, for the people were eager to hear it. It was as followeth. Peter Seely, one of the justices of the peace of this country, to the keeper of His Highness jail at Wanston, or his lawful deputy in that behalf, greeting. I send you herewithal by the bearers hereof the bodies of Edward Pyott of Bristol and George Fox of Drayton in the Clay in Leicestershire and William Salt of London, which they pretend to be the places of their habitations, who go under the notion of Quakers and acknowledge themselves to be such, who have spread several papers tending to the disturbance of the public peace, and cannot render any lawful cause of coming into those parts, being persons altogether unknown, having no pass for traveling up and down the country, and refusing to give sureties for their good behavior, according to the law in that behalf provided, and refuse to take oath of abjuration, etc. These are, therefore, in the name of His Highness the Lord Protector, to will and command you that when the bodies of the said Edward Pyott, George Fox, and William Salt shall be unto you brought, you them receive, and in His Highness's prison aforesaid you safely keep them, until by due course of law they shall be delivered. Hereof fail you not, as you will answer the contrary at your perils. Given under my hand and seal at St. Ives, the 18th day of January, 1655, P. Seely. When it was read, I spoke thus to the judge and justices. Thou that sayest thou art Chief Justice of England, and you justices, know that if I had put in sureties, I might have gone whither I pleased, and have carried on the design, if I had one, with which Major Seely hath charged me. And if I had spoken those words to him which he hath here declared, judge ye whether bail or main prize could have been taken in that case. Then turning my speech to Major Seely, I said, when or where did I take thee aside? Was not thy house full of rude people, and thou as rude as any of them at our examination, so that I asked for a constable or some other officer to keep the people civil? But if thou art my accuser, why sittest thou on the bench? It is not the place of accusers to sit with the judge. Thou oughtest to come down and stand by me and look me in the face. Besides, I would ask the judge and justices whether Major Seely is not guilty of this treason, which he charges against me, in concealing it so long as he hath done. Does he understand his place, either as a soldier or a justice of the peace? For he tells you here that I went aside with him and told him what a design I had in hand, and how serviceable he might be for my design, that I could raise 40,000 men in an hour's time, bring in King Charles, and involve the nation in blood. He saith moreover that he would have aided me out of the country, but I would not go, and therefore he committed me to prison, for want of sureties for the good behavior, as the Minimus declares. Now, do you not plainly see that Major Seely is guilty of this plot and treason he talks of, and hath made himself a party to it by desiring me to go out of the country, demanding bail of me, and not charging me with this pretended treason till now, nor discovering it? But I deny and abhor his words, and am innocent of his devilish design. So that business was let fall, for the judge saw clearly enough that instead of ensnaring me, Major Seely had ensnared himself. Major Seely got up again and said, If it please you, my lord, to hear me, this man struck me and gave me such a blow as I never had in my life. At this I smiled in my heart and said, Major Seely, thou art a justice of the peace, and a major of a troop of horse, and tellest the judge in the face of the court and country that I, a prisoner, struck thee and gave thee such a blow as thou never hadst the like of in thy life? What, art thou not ashamed? Pray thee, Major Seely, said I, where did I strike thee, and who is thy witness for that? Who was by? He said it was in the Castle Green, and Captain Braden was standing by when I struck him. I desired the judge to let him produce his witness for that, and called again upon Major Seely to come down from the bench, telling him that it was not fit that the accuser should sit as judge over the accused. When I called again for his witness, he said that Captain Braden was his witness. Then I said, Speak, Captain Braden, didst thou see me give him such a blow and strike him as he saith? Captain Braden made no answer, but bowed his head toward me. I desired him to speak up if he knew any such thing, but he only bowed his head again. Nay, said I, speak up and let the court and country hear, and let not bowing of the head serve the turn. If I had not done so, let the law be inflicted on me. I fear not sufferings nor death itself, for I am an innocent man concerning all this charge. But Captain Braden never testified to it, and the judge, finding those snares would not hold, cried, Take him away, jailer. And then, when we were taken away, he fined us 20 marks apiece for not putting off our hats, and sentenced us to be kept in prison till we paid it. So he sent us back to the jail. At night, Captain Braden came to see us, and 7 or 8 justices with him, who were very civil to us, and told us they believed neither the judge nor any in the court gave credit to the charges which Major Seely had brought forward against me in the face of the country. And Captain Braden said that Major Seely had an intent to take away my life if he could have got another witness. But, said I, Captain Braden, why didst not thou witness for me or against me, seeing Major Seely produce thee for a witness, that thou saw me strike him? And when I desired thee to speak either for me or against me, according to what thou saw or knew, thou wouldst not speak. Why, said he, when Major Seely and I came by you as you were walking in the Castle Green, he put off his hat to you and said, How do you do, Mr. Fox, your servant, sir? Then you said to him, Major Seely, Take heed of hypocrisy and of a rotten heart. For when came I to be thy master and thou my servant? Do servants cast their masters into prison? This was the great blow he meant you gave him. Then I called to mind that they walked by us, and that he spoke so to me, and I to him, which hypocrisy and rotten-heartedness he manifested openly, when he complained of this to the judge in open court, and in the face of the country, and would have made them all believe that I struck him outwardly with my hand. There came also to see us one Colonel Rouse, a justice of the peace, and a great company with him. He was as full of words and talk as ever I heard any man in my life, so that there was no speaking to him. At length I asked him whether he had ever been at school, and knew what belonged to questions and answers. This I said to stop him. At school, said he, yes. At school, said the soldiers, doth he say so to our colonel, that is a scholar? Then said I, if he be so, let him be still and receive answers to what he hath said. Then I was moved to speak the word of life to him in God's dreadful power, which came so over him that he could not open his mouth. His face swelled and was red like a turkey. His lips moved and he mumbled something, but the people thought he would have fallen down. I stepped up to him and he said he was never so in his life before, for the Lord's power stopped the evil power in him so that he was almost choked. The man was ever after very loving to friends and not so full of airy words to us, though he was full of pride, but the Lord's power came over him and the rest that were with him. Another time there came an officer of the army, a very malicious, bitter professor whom I had known in London. He was full of his airy talk also and spoke slightingly of the light of Christ and against the truth, and against the Spirit of God being in men, as it was in the apostles' days, till the power of God that found the evil in him had almost choked him as it did Colonel Rouse, for he was so full of evil that he could not speak, but blubbered and stuttered. But from the time that the Lord's power struck him and came over him, he was ever after more loving to us. The assizes being over, and we settled in prison upon such a commitment that we were not likely to be soon released, we broke off from giving the jailer 7 shillings a week apiece for our horses and 7 shillings a week for ourselves, and sent our horses into the country, upon which he grew very wicked and devilish and put us down into Doomsdale, a nasty, stinking place where they used to put murderers after they were condemned. Footnote 118. This description of Doomsdale is far from pleasant reading, but it is a true and faithful picture of a dungeon in the 17th century, and because of its historic importance, it is left exactly as it was written. It is no wonder the Quakers became prison reformers. The place was so noisome that it was observed few that went in did ever come out again in health. There was no house of office in it, and the excrement of the prisoners that from time to time had been put there had not been carried out, as we were told, for many years, so that it was all like mire and in some places to the tops of the shoes in water and urine, and he would not let us cleanse it nor suffer us to have beds or straw to lie on. At night some friendly people of the town brought us a candle and a little straw, and we burned a little of our straw to take away the stink. The thieves lay over our heads, and the head jailer in a room by them, over our heads also. It seems the smoke went up into the room where the jailer lay, which put him into such a rage that he took the pots of excrement from the thieves and poured them through a hole upon our heads in Doomsdale, till we were so bespattered that we could not touch ourselves nor one another, and the stink increased upon us, so that what with stink and what with smoke we were almost choked and smothered. We had the stink under our feet before, but now we had it on our heads and backs also. And he, having quenched our straw with the filth he poured down, had made a great smother in the place. Moreover, he railed at us most hideously, calling us hatchet-faced dogs and such strange names as we had never heard of. In this manner we were obliged to stand all night, for we could not sit down. The place was so full of filthy excrement. A great while he kept us after this manner before he would let us cleanse it, or suffer us to have any victuals brought in, but what we got through the grate. One time a girl brought us a little meat, and he arrested her for breaking his house, and sued her in the town court for breaking the prison. A great deal of trouble he put the young woman to, whereby others were so discouraged that we had much ado to get water, drink, or victuals. Near this time we sent for a young woman, Anne Downer, from London, who could write and take things well in shorthand, to buy and dress our meat for us, which she was very willing to do, it being also upon her spirit to come to us in the love of God, and she was very serviceable to us. The head jailer, we were informed, had been a thief, and was burnt both in the hand and in the shoulder. His wife, too, had been burnt in the hand. The under jailer had been burnt both in the hand and in the shoulder. His wife had been burnt in the hand also. Colonel Bennett, a Baptist teacher, having purchased the jails and lands belonging to the castle, had placed this head jailer there. the prisoners and some wild people would be talking of spirits that haunted Doomsdale, and how many had died in it, thinking perhaps to terrify us therewith. But I told them that if all the spirits and devils in hell were there, I was over them in the power of God and feared no such thing. For Christ our priest would sanctify the walls of the house to us, he who had bruised the head of the devil. Footnote 119. This has the ring of one of Luther's utterances. The priest was to cleanse the plague out of the walls of the house under the law, which had been ended by Christ our priest, who sanctifies both inwardly and outwardly the walls of the house, the walls of the heart, and all things to his people. By this time the general quarter sessions drew nigh, and the jailer still carrying himself basely and wickedly towards us, we drew up our suffering case and sent it to the sessions at Bodmin. On the reading thereof, the justices gave orders that Doomsdale door should be opened, and that we should have liberty to cleanse it and to buy our meat in the town. We also sent a copy of our sufferings to the protector, setting forth how we had been taken and committed by Major Seeley, and abused by Captain Keat, as aforesaid, and the rest in order. The protector sent down an order to Captain Fox, governor of Pendennis Castle, to examine the matter about the soldiers abusing us and striking me. There were at that time many of the gentry of the country at the castle, and Captain Keat's kinsman that struck me was sent for before them, and much threatened. They told him that if I should change my principles, I might take the extremity of law against him, and might recover sound damages of him. Captain Keat also was checked for suffering the prisoners under his charge to be abused. This was of great service in the country, for afterwards friends might speak in any market or steeple house thereabouts, and none would meddle with them. I understood that Hugh Peters, one of the protector's chaplains, told him they could not do George Fox a greater service for the spreading of his principles in Cornwall than to imprison him there. And indeed, my imprisonment there was of the Lord, and for his service in those parts. For after the assizes were over, and it was known that we were likely to continue prisoners, several friends from most parts of the nation came into the country to visit us. Those parts of the West were very dark countries at that time, but the Lord's light and truth broke forth, shone over all, and many were turned from darkness to light and from Satan's power unto God. Many were moved to go to the steeple houses, and several were sent to prison to us, and a great convincement began in the country. For now we had liberty to come out and to walk in the castle green, and many came to us on first days, to whom we declared the word of life. Great service we had among them, and many were turned to God up and down the country. But great rage possessed the priests and professors against the truth and us. One of the envious professors had collected many scripture sentences to prove that we ought to put off our hats to the people, and he invited the town of Launceston to come into the castle yard to hear him read them. Amongst other instances that he there brought, one was that Saul bowed to the witch of Endor. When he had done, we got a little liberty to speak, and we showed both him and the people that Saul was gone from God and had disobeyed God when he went to the witch of Endor, that neither the prophets nor Christ nor the apostles ever taught people to bow to a witch. Another time, about 11 at night, the jailer, being half drunk, came and told me that he had got a man now to dispute with me. This was when we had leave to go a little into the town. As soon as he spoke these words, I felt there was mischief intended to my body. All that night and the next day I lay down on a grass plot to slumber and felt something still about my body. I started up and struck at it in the power of the Lord, and still it was about my body. Then I rose and walked into the castle green and